are stage readings with projections and live music by Unit Sozo. And the shows are January 27th at 7:30 p.m. and the 28th at 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at New Expressive Works, located at 810 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. And you can find out more on my website, dmayroberts.com. That's it for stage and studio. Thank you to engineer Tave Fache Drake. Hey, inaugural show with me. I'll have this show online later today, stageandstudio.org, kboo.fm/stageandstudio, and the podcast at iTunes. Like us on facebook.com/stageletterandstudio. Tweet me at @stageletterandstudio. Till next time, I'm Dmay Roberts. Everybody stay warm. We're going to go out with more music. Thanks. From David Ornette Cherry, actually. Okay, we're off. Guys!
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Next Level, a benefit dance party on Saturday, January 21st, after the Women's March, starting at 8 p.m. at the Jade Club in Portland. This 21 and over event features Jen O of Strange Babes, KBOO's DJ Anjali, and Casual Aztec, as well as performances and more. Again, that's Next Level, a benefit dance party on Saturday, January 21st at 8 p.m. at the Jade Club, 315 Southeast 3rd Avenue in Portland. More information on the event can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up next is Art Focus with Joseph Gallivan. He's going to be interviewing painter and glass artist Alex Hirsch about her new show, Once Asunder. The show is brought to you and made part and possible by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland 5, presenting an evening with Spanish classical guitarist Pablo Sanviejas. Born and raised in La Rioja, Spain, Pablo Viegas performs compositions that echo his homeland's musical heritage. January 20th at the Newmark Theater in Portland. Tickets and information are available at portland5.com.
Andy Warhol looks at screen, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Alex Hirsch, a painter and glass artist, whose show Once Asunder is on now at the Russo Lee Gallery on Northwest 21st Avenue through January 28th. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Alex.
Thank you very much.
This show is in the rear part of the Russo Lee Gallery, and it's really in two rooms. You go into the first room, and on your left there are five works. They're both about 2 or 3 feet square, quite medium size, and I was looking at them, and it took me a while before I realized they were actually glass. I thought they were paper. So it's this white glass with abstract images on of lines, gold dots. Tell us why you use that glass, which looks so much like paper.
The closer you look, viewers have said that they realize that there's a thickness and there's a twinkle that comes from the tiny bits of glass. That manner of working is something I developed around 2012, 2013, and the impetus was that I wanted to find an expression in glass that paralleled my sensibility in watercolor, and in particular paralleled my personal studio sensibility as opposed to the glass work I've done for private and public commissions, because the audience and the criteria are different. And with those pieces, I don't need to think about, like, how will they be cleaned in a public lobby, for instance. I can just think of them as an art object, and mm-hmm. I wanted them to kind of have a relationship to my other personal artwork.
So I guess they cross over, right? So they're solid glass, but they're in a frame behind glass.
So no, there's no frame. It's You're talking about, we'll do that again. Okay.
So there are kind of crossover between your watercolor work and your glass work.
Exactly.
And they're just glass up against the wall?
Right. It's glass with a mounting device in back. So it has the nice quality of not having to be behind glass like a work on paper tends to need to be. And the so the surface is glass, and then it's painted with enamels and treated with 22 karat gold at the end.
So the first one on the left is called Coupling, and it's two circles in the middle, and they're outlined by a sort of an egg shape. I don't really know what that shape's called, like a square with round ends. And then there are black lines behind it. And then there are also images within the circles of kind of spreading ink as though you dropped black ink on wet paper. And then the image that goes around the circles is made up of fine gold dots. Presume that is gold leaf on something else?
Right. I put material down underneath the gold leaf to act as a barrier between the frit or the glass surface and the gold leaf. So I actually, each dot gets handled about 5 or 6 times because I paint the dots at least twice, and then I put glue on them at least twice, and then I put the gold on them.
What's the dot made of then underneath the gold?
There's acrylic paint and then gold leaf adhesive below it. Right. And then the gold leaf.
Right.
Right. So it seems kind of like it has a minimalist look, but the work behind it takes more steps than you would know.
It takes a ton of work. So it kind of looks like electronics, you know, like somebody's had a soldering iron and just put a dot of gold every place, but it's more complicated than that.
Interesting, yeah. With the work on glass, there's no room for error. Actually, with the work in watercolor, it's kind of similar. Both processes are what I call additive, which means the way I build the image and the way I resolve any flaws or problems with the image is by continuing to add to it until I try to resolve it. So with the glass, because there's no way for me to erase something or remove something, I make a stencil to kind of try to anticipate where each dot will go. But because I'm still very human, when I go to do it, it's always a little different.
Mm-hmm. And then there's another one in there called In Summation. Just tell us a bit, what does that look like? What is the basic shape?
So In Summation, all of these are square pieces. They're about 17 and a half inches square, actually. And there's most of a circle created by a sequence of gold dots along what would be the outline of the circle. But the circle is a jar, like a little off the right side of the image.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of cropped
cropped
by the square, yeah.
Exactly. And then within that circle, I believe it's just the white pristine surface of the glass or the picture plane. And everywhere around that circle is a kind of attempt at bombardment of geometric linear shapes that are flying and kind of flinging themselves and being potentially repelled by that gold circle.
Yeah, a lot of your lines look like confetti or long, like ticker tape. They're long rectangles, and they're spread as though they're being thrown or they're emanating from a source. Sometimes, and then other times they're chaotic, but in this case they can't touch this white circle.
Right. So this piece is called In Summation, and I gave it that name because it's a bridge between the watercolors and the show, where there's a lot of disarray and tension between whether things are coming apart or coming together, and the glass pieces where there's comparatively more stillness and a kind of calm and a sense of boundaries that are maybe kind of like more sacred or protected boundaries. So this piece has this gold rim, which might be referenced as a mandala or as a something of integrity that's protected from or deflecting the energies around it.
Mm-hmm. These glass pieces, how long would one take you to do?
The working sessions, well, there are multiple working sessions, so it goes into the kiln. There's a day to make something and put it in the kiln to make the surface, to make the kind of glass, quote, mm-hmm. piece of paper. And then there's time from before I go on to the glass surface. I've developed a bunch of sketches, which I think we'll talk about later. So I've done sketching to plan for what I want to do on the glass surface. I build some stencils so that I can find my curves and placement of all the shapes. There's putting down the marks, firing for the enamels, and then the last stages are adding the gold dots. So it tends to happen at least over 4 days, plus the sketching. And there were a few weeks of running tests in the kiln because I wanted to. This was new, even though I'd worked on the glass, it was new vocabulary to use the lines and to introduce gray and splattering. And each of those, the glass is kind of a beast. So mm-hmm. there are dozens and dozens of tests. And even then, when I open the kiln, I'm often surprised by something that didn't occur earlier.
Yeah. Is it how many firings then for one successful piece? Two?
These just have two. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all the gold is on after it's cooled, and that's never fired.
Right.
Right. So in the next room you have the sketches that led to these glass pieces. They are in frames, right?
Right.
Very small, like 3x3 kind of little sketches.
Yeah, I think framed. You know, it might be like, I don't know, 17 inches across, that includes 3 or 4 little mm-hmm. drawings.
Did you make the drawings with a view to selling them?
It's interesting. I make work because I need to make work. And then the best work I hope to find an audience for and a home for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't tend to put a hierarchy between a sketch and a small drawing and a painting. I sometimes don't know for a year or two whether something was preliminary or it really just works.
Mm-hmm.
When I started the 10x14 pieces, there's a grid of 9 of them. When I started those, people said to me, "Are these sketches?" And I thought, they're just work. I don't need to call them a sketch or not a sketch. Mm-hmm. It's work. And like I said, it takes me a while. So the sequences, I did them as a way to brainstorm, but I think they're kind of lovely. So I think people could
right.
buy them.
Do you talk to the gallery about what they want? You know, do they come and look at stuff and say, "Oh, we could sell that," or "We could show this"? And
in the case of working with Martha Lee of the Russo Lee Gallery, she came to my studio in June. June. And she was excited by the work. I have a lot of work I've made since about September 2014 from which I called for this exhibition. So she came to the studio, saw the range of work, told me particular pieces or groupings which excited her. And then I continued to make work, and I actually did all the selections. I gave the gallery a little bit more than there was room to hang, and they made the final edits, but she actually gave me the choice, really, of what to present.
Mm-hmm. So these little works are works on paper, mm-hmm. right? What kind of ink or paint are you using?
It's black watercolor. I did sometimes use Sumi ink as well. They're kind of interchangeable for me, except I guess I use the watercolor more for washes and the Sumi ink for dots, for the real darkness of the Sumi ink. And then I love a Holbein iridescent watercolor that I get that's in silver and gold. And
is that a brand, Holbein?
Holbein, yeah. Holbein's a brand.
So the gold in these little sketches is not gold leaf?
No, the only actual gold leaf is on the glass pieces, and many of the watercolors use iridescent gold or silver watercolor, and that's what gives it that kind of shimmer.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Alex Hirsch. Her show, Once Asunder, is on now at Russo Lee Gallery on Northwest 21st Avenue, and it runs through January 28th. In the first room, opposite the initial five glass pieces, three. Just tell us about them. What material are they?
There's a watercolor. The paper's about 22 by 30 called Span, and that has an atmospheric background, which again is, it's made with the same watercolor materials with washes and spray layered, and then long lines. They're kind of like beams or poles or slats. I've heard people say pickup sticks.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Looks like jack straws.
As I make those, I really feel like I'm building them. So this body of work is interesting and different for me in that it's the most geometric and architectural of work I've made before. I feel like my mind is a little bit more like a sculptor thinking about constructing something in space. And my sense is that the years I've spent doing site-specific glass commissions for architectural environments has started mm-hmm. to influence my painting.
Oh, yeah. Where are some of those, by the way? Your public works? Is there any? Can the public go and see any of them?
There's one in a in dermatological surgery's waiting room at OHSU's Center for Health and Healing. I have a piece in the Memorial Union at Oregon State University. I have four windows at Southern Oregon University in Ashland mm-hmm. and a few projects in Puyallup, Washington. Mm-hmm. So to make those, even though the imagery is very organic and kind of naturalistic, I've been thinking a lot about construction. Mm-hmm. Span has a sense of these forms that are maybe falling apart, or in there's this kind of a sense of destruction, or the structures, this broken down structures, and a bit of a reference to communication through an allusion to wires and telephone poles mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yeah.
And then there two white forms that hang in the front of the picture plane with this cord or link between them that is kind of hanging on. It's like a maybe stretching out your hand to another person in the midst of everything else falling apart.
Mm-hmm. The postcard image, which people can find everywhere, is a light blue background with black and white rectangles and also some gray ones. And it's called Explosion One. And it is the most sort of intense and chaotic, I think, of the pieces and sort of dynamic in that sense of it looks like an explosion or something's going crazy. Mm-hmm. That is pretty direct. There's nothing suggestive about it. Why is this one so different from the others, and what does it mean?
That was an image with me trying to explore and express a sensation of overwhelmment. Is that a word? Overwhelmment?
Being overwhelmed.
Being overwhelmed.
Yeah. By what?
Change and new experiences.
Personal or global, political?
For me, the impetus was personal. But while I made the work, I felt very aware that sociopolitical changes around the world were happening, with revolutions, with people standing up to change their leadership right now.
Were you making these in 2016?
I was making them in 2015 and 2016. Mm-hmm. So all these images actually came before our election. But with the results of the election here in the United States, I thought, well, I've been thinking about this sense of people being on a precipice of their culture changing, their leadership changing, a sense of insecurity and excitement, maybe, you know. Mm-hmm. People who've looked at this work actually ironically see some hope in it, which is part of the point. Like the show image, Explosion One, that's blue and gray, blue with black, white, and gray in the composition, I wanted the white to essentially like win out amidst mm-hmm. everything. So,
well, there's a lot less of the white, but it's sort of foreground. It's like it's catching the light somehow. It's closer.
Yeah. In this country, we tend to think of white as being good symbolically. So given that I'm from this culture, for me, there's just enough white that the black doesn't suck you in and dominate. The white kind of takes the wins in the balance. And then the shimmer that's in many of the pieces is also a suggestion of hope, or for me, it's like a prayer.
Mm-hmm. Shimmer meaning catching the light. Why is that like a prayer?
The luminescence from the iridescent watercolor or the gold and the other pieces. Well, it's beautiful. It's kind of sublime. There's a history of, you know, it's gem-like. I loved the cupolas and Byzantine chapels where the ceiling was painted gold. I have a Buddhist practice where kind of precious metals are part of the ritual, I'd mm-hmm. say. So
you're a Buddhist?
I'm informed by Buddhism. I wouldn't say I'm a full-on Buddhist, but I have had a Buddhist dance practice for between 7 and 8 years, and I'm definitely informed by
that?
It's called Charya Nritya, and there's a temple here in southeast Portland, and we do a dance practice where you honor and embody deities who essentially are ourselves.
And what does it look like? Is it like?
It looks a little bit like Tai Chi or Indian traditional dance. It's unique in that it's a little bit like hula in that every gesture has a significance. There are many layers of meaning, but you know, you might add a few extra footsteps or spins for expression or the artfulness of it. But by and large, every gesture, which would be called a mudra, has a symbolic meaning that correlates to that bodhisattva or deity. And so the use of the circle in we work constantly making circles to kind of create a protected or sacred space with our bodies being in the center and that being the circle around us. So I think that's part of where my circles come from.
Oh, right. And talking of that iridescence and the sort of light winning out, you have another piece called Skylight, which really does look like light, kind of, you know, the light breaking through clouds or something coming down and in a triangle. Is that related?
When I made that piece, I was thinking of shattering, of shattering
the glass ceiling.
Just a sense of shattering or collapse, but it actually doesn't have the heaviness of sense of like collapse. It both shatters and radiates. I think the pieces, I try to have the pieces have tensions where it's neither one thing nor another.
Mm-hmm. There's so many of these pieces have these long, thin rectangles kind of scattered. Do you do it with paper or how do you get that? You know, how do you get them straight?
I have a few brushes that I like, and I use the side of the brush. So people think I've taken the brush and drawn it, like put the brush down and pulled it like you would to, say, write, you know, your name in script. You pull it across, or like in calligraphy. But actually, I use flat brushes and more like an inchworm, make little line segments one after another until I build a longer form. And there's no stencil or tape or tool besides the brush, essentially, to develop mm-hmm. those line elements.
Well, it sounds like slow work, right? Even though the end image is of something exploding, maybe. But
yeah.
Is it really slow work?
It's slow, and it's kind of a combination of deliberate, because I have to be really pay attention to how I load the brush and making the line straight and where's it going to go since there's no way to correct it, and then being very intuitive and kind of being in the flow, as they say. And part of the time is waiting till I can see what the piece needs next. So building a piece isn't only about the time with my materials in action. It's about responding to what's there and what the piece is needing. And I start with the most rudimentary, like I start with a gut feeling or an energy, a palette, maybe a ballpoint pen on a scrap of paper that I made a little sketch on in my car, because that's where I get a lot of ideas. And then I really don't know what the piece is going to look like. Mm-hmm. So there's the time and just kind of going on that journey to have it.
A lot of
birthed.
Artists who've been on the show talk about painting and then stepping back and watching, see what they've done, and then waiting to see what's next.
Mm-hmm.
Does that happen over seconds for you, or minutes, or days?
Probably all of it. Seconds, minutes, days, maybe from one week to the next week. These pieces, because I don't want them to get like too heavy or overworked, I try to be judicious in what I put down. And so I wait sometimes until I know the next thing I need to do.
Mm-hmm. What kind of car do you have?
A Subaru. But whatever car I have, I always have a pad of paper by the driver's seat.
And then there is one big one at the end called Nowhere to Go But Up, which is a lot of sort of lines balancing, it seems. It's kind of like a ladder or a staircase, or a very fragile structure anyway. You know, it's got bronze and gray, and it's got some colors. It's a big piece. Would you say you put more into that piece than some of the other paper pieces? Plus, it's got an entertaining title.
No, I wouldn't say that one had more time than the other. It may have actually had less physical working time because there's less paint on it. and there are fewer layers of paint. I think a lot of what comes into work that people maybe who don't make work don't realize is there's the life experience. There's not only the years of doing your art form, but there's the living that we do that has to be kind of digested and metabolized to then have an image come out. So that even though that one doesn't have a lot of time in the making, there's time in the living to get it.
Mm-hmm. But there's no sense of you're looking for a silver lining because you didn't like 2016's politics. There's nowhere to go but up.
That piece is actually from 2014. Mm-hmm. I guess if art works, it transcends what year it was made.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Alex Hirsch. Her show, Once Asunder, is on now at the Russo Lee Gallery at 805 Northwest 21st Avenue through January the 28th. There's also an artist talk on January the 19th at 6 o'clock. Thanks very much for coming to KBOO, Alex.
Thank you so much, Joseph. Andy Warhol looks at screen. Hang him on my wall.
Andy Warhol, silver screen. You're listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio. Yeah!
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the opening reception of Giving Back, The Soul of Philanthropy, Reframed and Exhibited, Friday, January 20th at 6 p.m. at Concordia University's George R. White Library in Portland. This event was